So today we're going to talk about how beautiful a partnership can happen when there's a parent advisory council and the emergency department working together. So we don't have any financial disclosures or conflicts of interest. I am Allison Beyer. I am going to be stepping into a leadership role as a co-chair of the parent advisory committee. And then we have...
I'm Carrie Gold. I'm representing the emergency department at Ronald Reagan UCLA Medical Center, and I'm also what they call the pediatric liaison nurse. So anything pediatric that occurs in our department falls in my realm to either fix or make better.
All right. Oh, you had one more line. So our objectives for this talk is to recognize the utility of having hospital staff available to the Parent Advisory Council, discuss how to effectively present a concern from parents to the hospital staff, identify how to use evidence-based practice and quality improvement projects to affect change in patient care in the patient care setting, and then recognize the innovation of the collaboration of a patient advisory council and patient family-centered care with the ED staff.
So. Okay, I threw this slide in because this is a mixed audience, and we've given a similar presentation to mixed audiences, and I have to admit, and I will be the first one to admit, that 4 years ago, somebody said, oh, will you join PFCC? I'm like, what the heck is that? And I don't know if anybody listened to the keynote speaker this morning, but she did a really cool, they did a really cool sort of talk about how the parent advisor was like, all these acronyms, what does all this stuff mean? So I was on the flip side, being the healthcare person, I didn't know what PFCC meant. So I'm like, what the heck is, I'll join, but I don't know what it is. So as an ER nurse, this was not a concept I was familiar with in 2012. And I don't know, how many nurses do we have in the group? And just a few. And how many parent advisors? Okay, so you guys sort of get what I'm talking about. I had no idea. I'm like, yeah, I'll do anything you want me to do. But so for me, it was a learning experience. I didn't know anything about patient family-centered care. I didn't know anything about parent advisors. So that's why I threw that slide in there, because it was a learning experience for me back in 2012. Obviously, things have changed since then, but I think there's still, and we're a big facility. I'm sure there's many smaller facilities that still have not gotten the concept of patient and family-centered care, and that's why we're all here.
Yeah, and when we started the council, we were very small, you know, just a little round table discussion. There was no table, actually. We were just a little round discussion. And a lot of us just came with grievances or things that we thought we could have improved in the hospital. So we didn't really know the value of what we could really do. We are very fortunate. There is a group called PFCC Partners in the Los Angeles area. They're based out of Long Beach. We were able to connect with Libby Hui, the CEO, and she came to a meeting in our second year, and she began to tell us what PFCC really meant and what change we could do in the system. And from there, I mean, she kind of catapulted us into another dimension, so we're really grateful for her. So if you're in the LA area and you need something for your staff, PFCC Partners was a game changer for us.
She's been able to provide a ton of resources, especially for our PFAs. She's been able to provide, you were showing me some of the training tools that she provided yesterday, mm-hmm. and they have all these training sessions. There's sessions online, there's webinars, so it's really a fantastic learning tool that we've been able to capitalize on.
Also, the partnership with her was for the whole system, so we were the first patient and family, first parent advisory council, but there's other patient councils now. There's four of us, so she's available to the entire health system, so everyone can join. We did a skills exchange lab, which if you saw her speak yesterday, you would know what I'm talking about. But it kind of just, it took me 5 years to kind of get up to speed with what I could do or how to present yourself. This gets it in 4 hours, so we were able to do that, and the whole health system could participate in that. So it was a really good partnership. So Mattel Children's Hospital. We're a hospital within a hospital. We have two floors in a greater hospital. And so it's a great little hospital that's very highly specialized physicians. But because it's a hospital within a hospital, we have shared services like anesthesia or surgery or the emergency department, which comes into play for me personally because my son, he has post-traumatic stress disorder because of everything that he's gone through. So we can go to the emergency department, and he can freak out about something, and they could blow it off like, oh, the kid's just scared. But that's a for real thing that we have to deal with, and they don't know that. So it's really important that we advocate and we have the representation that we do have so that we can have these partnerships and give better care to the patient. We have very complex patients here. We don't have, you know, broken bones and bruises. These guys are multi-organ transplants. My son's a two-time renal transplant. He needed a neobladder construction. We've had a child on the council. He's since passed away. He was a six-organ transplant. We have cancer. We have bone marrow transplants. These guys are really complex. So great physicians, but like I said, shared services. So it's an interesting situation for us.
Yeah, one of our co-workers on the committee had a child who had hepatoblastoma, so liver cancer, as a baby. So she ended up with HemOnc as one of her teams. Then she got a liver transplant. She ended up with liver transplant as one of her teams. So when they would come in, they'd be like, who's your doctor? Like, well, which one do you want? You know, they're multi-services. So sometimes it was, well, he's doing this and that, she's doing that. So there was not always a great communication between the teams. And for those of you that work in transplant centers, you probably know what I'm talking about. It can get very disjointed and care can get a bit fragmented. It wasn't the day of the old GP when one person knew everything about you. Now you've got multi-services involved, and that can get really complicated, especially if you're sitting in the ED where it can be just baffling as to who takes care of you. So the emergency department, we're a level one trauma center. We see and do pretty much everything. So stroke, STEMIs, traumas, you know, we see a complex adults as well as complex kids. And we do quite a lot of transplants. Our pediatric population is not huge. That's about 14% of our adult population. So for those of you who work in adult combined adult pediatric facilities, you can probably understand that the challenges that it is that present when you have a combined facility. So during our meeting, the ED meeting, PAC had our PAC Parent Advisory Council group had identified some needs in some different areas of improvement, and this started our project.
Okay.
So and there's Allison and her lovely
this
family.
This is me and my beautiful little family. So we have she's 18 months old now. We have like this running joke that she's like, she's crazy. We didn't get to, she's not crazy, but we didn't get to raise my first. My first was born 32 weeks. He had so many things. He was born with kidney failure. That was his biggest. They call it just multiple congenital anomalies, so like everything you could think of. So there's something wrong with a lot of things. But two-time renal transplant. He has a neobladder construction. He had a hip that they tried to like build up that didn't work. And ironically, the guy said he's like the world renowned, and he's like, I've only failed one time. It's your kid. He's got like a little arm. He's missing a radius bone, a clubbed hand, so all kinds of little things. But the life things were the kidney and the bladder. He's had 50 over 50. We lost count of surgeries at 46 in 2012. So he's had a lot. He's very busy, and so. We didn't know, though. Like, I didn't get a chance to parent him. I held his hand. I told him he was brave. I'd cry when he was in surgery, but I never got a chance to parent my child. I just kind of watched other people take care of him. So then we get the next one, and they say she's uneventful. You know, in the medical field, she's uneventful. There's nothing going on with her. And I can tell you, in the other world, it's like completely opposite. She's running around. She grabs things. If you say no, you can't have that, she hides it and runs. I'm in a boot, so I'm like an extended 6 weeks in the boot because of running around after her. So it's kind of chaos being a first-time parent with this 7-year-old medically fragile child. So that's kind of us in a nutshell. I'm sure I'll tell you more about Evan, but that's my beautiful little family. So the Mattel Children's Hospital UCLA Parent Advisory Council. It was started in 2010. I came in on 2011, so I can't speak very much to the first year. But they started with the child life special, the head of child life. She came from another hospital, and she said she wanted to bring this to UCLA. No one knew of it. They didn't have any other advisory councils. No one got the whole PFCC thing. So they just formed it. It was in the family resource room. It was like 10 people in a circle just trying to figure out what they could do in every day to make life easier for a patient or a family. So that's kind of how it started. And then the people that we have involved are our departmental sponsors. We have patient affairs or head of the patient experience. We have doctors. We have nurses. We have care coordination, social work, the child life. And then after the first year and into the second, after we talked to PFCC partners, we ended up getting the COO on board and the executive director of Women and Children's Services. So we're able to make huge changes now based on what we were able to do early on. On the parent side of it, we have about 20, we call them frequent flyers. They call us high utilizers. So there's about 20 of us. The criteria to be in is you need to have 90 days of care at UCLA. It could be in the ED, it could be in, you know, outpatient clinics, but you need 90 altogether. It doesn't have to be in a row unless you're like us. It will be in a row. But, so 90. And we try to represent everyone because it's really easy to come in and say, I want to change this, this, and this, and get really passionate about one thing. But we have to be the voice of everyone, especially kids, because there's a lot of kids that don't have their parents there or family there, and so it's really important for us to speak for them. So we try to be very varied. Like I said, we have multiple organ transplants, cancer, cystic fibrosis. So we try to cover everybody.
I think, too, on this slide, if I have to say what made a really big difference, I think you'll agree, the senior leadership buy-in. Once we got the COO involved, all of a sudden, like, things that we had been talking about all of a sudden started to happen.
That's true.
Pretty amazing.
And we also have the head of operations there sometimes, so he'll come in and you'll say, hey, I need this done. He's like, done. So that's, like, amazing. We get things done on the fly because of the leadership. It's just ask and they give it to us. Okay, so some of the accomplishments. In the first year, the biggest accomplishment was this guy here. It was a pediatric binder, which we can pass around. We have two of them, right? These two?
There's one in English and one in Spanish.
We did one in English and Spanish. So these are that was the biggest accomplishment. It's kind of like a concierge book. When you come in, it's a teaching hospital. It's a little overwhelming. You got a resident, you got a fellow, you got an attending. I don't know why the nurse and the care partner, who is everybody? My husband still doesn't know. He tries to give like whole medical history to the care partner who just wants vitals. So it's important to have that to kind of break it down. So that tells you everything. It tells you about where you can go get something to eat, where's parking, you know, what services are offered. It's really, really great to have that. And especially in downtime in the hospital, it's like something to read. So that was the biggest. It wasn't mine because I came the second year, but I'll take credit. It was the biggest one in the first year. They also came up with the idea of a snack cart. And I don't know if any of you are parents or, you know, you advocate for your patient, but when my son's really sick, I don't want to leave the bedside. I just want to be there with him. So I don't eat. I don't take care of myself. Why would I? So they came up with a snack cart that kind of wheels around. They knock on the door. You come out. You can have an apple or an orange Nutri-Grain bar. We also, after the snack cart started to go around, we started to use it as a really good communication tool. Hey, you know, we're going to screen this movie. The kids can come down. Or, you know, that we have Zumba on the terrace. You want to come down and do that? That we have tea, and they have, like, a lady with a big harp, you know. So they would tell you that because you're not going to find out. You're sitting in the room. So they're saying, get out, you know, go have tea and listen to the harp. It's great. So they started using that. But as we progressed, you know, that snack cart turned into two meals for the parent with the patient. So I can call and get a hot meal, and it comes up with my son's tray, and now it's at the bedside. So now we have two meals a day that we can have that are hot, and it's not just an apple. It's a full meal. So it's evolved into that. We also had laundry services, which is like a fluff and fold. You drop off your laundry. You can pay for it online, and they drop it back. So if you're in there, someone's washing your clothes. Now we take it a step further. This year because of our ED partnership was so successful, we've partnered with the residents. And so it was my idea, so I'm going to take credit for this one. But we asked the residents, like, how do you get your scrubs done? You're working 40 hours. You don't sleep. They said, we really don't. We can't keep up with our laundry. So we've offered the fluff and fold to them. So that's been something really nice that we've been able to do. And other things, you can read all the things, but we have all kinds of beautiful accomplishments. So our partnership. The partnership is a wonderful thing for us because we were very passionate. Any of us are not passionate about what we're doing here. That's why we're here. So we were very passionate, and we wanted to partner with them, but past ones weren't successful for whatever reason. I mean, we had a parent come in to talk to residents at one time, and they were so offended that we couldn't talk to the residents for years. So they were just a little emotional, and so were the residents. So you just, you know, they weren't successful. So this is what happened. So we got to them. We did a strategic presentation. We met with them. We were able to partner with them. We're still doing it today, and now we've used the successful model for other relationships. So how did we do that? Well, one of the things was we got staff support on it. Now, because we're Mattel Children's, we kind of know how Mattel Children's runs, but we don't know how UCLA Ronald Reagan runs. So staff was huge to tell us, like, this is what's going on. They're not going to be able to change this, or they are able to change this, but not in the way that you want. So we really needed to know how they work and what side they were coming from. So they did that. They also told us, you got to kind of dial the passion down a bit, because we were like sobbing, telling our stories. We can't do that. That's not very professional. So they said, you got to dial that back. They set it up so that we did. We really like figured out a really concise plan, and we delivered it. I can't say it really nice. I'm trying to figure out the nice way of saying it, but I can't think of it right now. But we did very succinctly, I guess, we delivered that. So they made sure that no passion muddled the message. They distributed our presentation beforehand. I recently went through the presentation, and it's kind of shocking some of the stuff we brought up. We were very blunt and very bold and let them know. So I think it was important to to kind of give them time to download on that before we kind of hit them with it. Ironically, Carrie never got it, so only her leadership got it, so she came right into the firing zone. But anyway, so we asked them to come to an optional meeting. So they didn't have to come. You know, this is what we had. Maybe if you want to have a conversation, we'd like to partner with you. And so staff was very, very helpful, especially the gentleman that's head of the patient experience. He really finessed the whole thing, and I think without them, we would have never done it. So, that, you know, staff involvement in the PFA is like, yeah, is really crucial. So here's the presentation. We met twice. We had two meetings before, and we talked a lot offline about it. But we wanted to really have the best presentation, and we had to do it in 2 hours, you know. So the presentation was very concise. Our first ask was to partner with them. I mean, right off the bat was to partner with them because we don't want to tell you what's wrong. We just want to work with you, and let's try to make change together. And I think that was a key. That was a huge thing. So the key themes were identified and illustrated. We assigned one individual something because when we meet, I don't know about you guys, but when we meet, we're like, everyone's like in because everyone's got an opinion and everyone wants to talk and we're really excited. So what we did was we assigned, you know, a parent or two to each issue that we had. We had 10 issues. So I got to speak twice, like mine was nursing and sepsis. And so with each presentation or each issue that we brought up, we said what it was, but we also told our personal story because we wanted to let them know we came up with these changes because we've lived this, so we really needed this. So everybody was everybody had their own story. So after we did the suggestions, we also started the meeting with telling them all the things that were good. You guys are amazing. We love when you do this. Keep doing a good job. And then we just like hammered them. So...
But, they got us, though. They totally got us. Well, they started with their stories. So when she said they dialed it down, well, we were sobbing by the end of the story. So we were sobbing, and then you, like, made us laugh. And so we were crying and then laughing. We're like, oh, my God. And when I don't know if you've, like, the first time, the ER stories are like, oh, yeah, this guy got shot. We sent him to the OR. He's fine. He's going to live. That's our story. But then when you hear what the parent lives through, that's just a whole different ballpark. So they're each telling their story. And they did it. You did it really succinctly. You're like, this is the situation. This is what we went through, and this is where we are today. And you're like, oh, my God. So we were just shell-shocked. So we hear every parent told, and I think there were probably at least six or eight of them. So each of them told their story. So, you know, they start off us off crying. Then they tell us how great we are. And then we're like, oh, okay, this isn't so bad. Because I went in going, do I need body armor coming into this meeting? Because I really don't know what to expect. Because my boss got the presentation, but I didn't get it. So I had no idea what to expect. So I just went in, you know, all smiles, which is me. I'm like, okay, this is going to be fine. So it was. And then they hit us with the presentation. But by that point, we were ready. We're like, whatever we can do to make your lives better and the care of your kids better, I will do anything. I will bend over backwards for you guys after hearing what you've gone through. And to hear that story, and I know everybody keeps talking about the story, but it really is true. The story can really just totally make the difference.
And that's what it was. I think the way that we opened it, you know, rubbing their back and letting them know how great they were, made them a little calm. And then we brought out our stories, and that we really want to, and I try to do that every time I speak. We just kind of want to let everyone's guard down so that we can get to the raw deal. Because in order to make change, we have to affect each other's hearts, I feel, in a way. So this, you know, one famous line of this presentation, a coworker of mine wrote, is we laughed, we cried, we broke bread. You know, we did. That meeting was really beautiful, and because we went in there and we partnered and the way that we did it, we were able to identify all kinds of issues that we could work on. But the thing was, like, and I think we find this with all of our meetings, is we had these 10 things, but they also had them too. I mean, they knew it. So it wasn't like we were, you know, telling them something they didn't. So what happened was we had the COO on our side, and they would push and push. But, like, you know, to come from both angles, to connect and have that pairing, that's what really made it. You know, that was where the voice got louder, and he was there. Wasn't he in the room?
Yep.
He's not in that picture. But I think he was in that room. Yep. And so because of that, because of the weight that we brought into it in the collaboration, we were able to really get the change done. But I don't think it happens on our side or on their side. We have to do it together. So since that, I thought that was in a slide, but since that, let me say, nope. Since that day, we've had really successful partnerships with other departments. We've met with billing, outpatient physician billing. We've met with the outpatient clinics. And our biggest one is we finally got the residents back. We eventually want to get to the attendings. We know that the attendings are the key players. They make all the big decisions. It's always the guys at the top. But this year, last year, the fiscal year, we've been able to work with the residents, and I go in quarterly, and I get to talk to them, and I get to tell them where I come from, but I also get to tell them, hey, we love you. You know, you're in it with us. You know, the attending's up here, but you're on the battlefield with us, and we really appreciate you. And so we let them know, because I don't think residents get to hear that. So because of that, we've been able to do other things. And one big one was that we had a parent, we had a boy, and we grew up in the hospital. Like, we lived in the hospital. We've been there for about 3 years, and we literally lived there. We call it our timeshare when we go in because, you know. And so we had a beautiful boy. He was a multi-organ transplant. He passed away actually right before my daughter was born in January of last year. And when he died, he was like at the end of a lot of little kids that died. And they become your family. You live there. So when he passed away, his family, they were on the council. They didn't really know what to do the next day. So they came back to the hospital. And the hospital didn't know what to do because they were hurting so bad. So they said, well, we have to take care of ours. And it's all about resilience training. And we've just got to really make it right. And so something happened that day. You know, your family wasn't there for you. You're going through your worst thing ever. And they left you. You know, and so they came back to the meeting and they said, we need to make this, we got to make it right. But we couldn't do it from our side because they were so, we're hurt, we got to protect ourselves. Well, in that resident training that I went to, where I talked to them, one of the residents brought up the thing. You know, we were able to make it so that there wasn't, you know, everyone was really calm and they were crying. And the girl said, what happens when the patient dies? What happens to the family? And I told her. And from that, we've been able to set up a program. And we're still, you know, working it out because it's very touch and go with how you proceed after something like that. But the family is now able to say, yeah, I do want to meet with them. And so they're going to come together after and download and hug and talk about it so there's closure on both ends. And that's another thing that would have never happened without both sides expressing that, and it would have never happened without this. So without this partnership and without one successful one, without that model, you know, you don't have something like that. And now we have room to make really great changes. That's so impactful to be able to say goodbye to your family. I mean, I would have been devastated if I were in their shoes, so I'm glad that we were able to make that right. So, yeah, this meeting was a beautiful thing. So I'm going to pass it over to Carrie.
Okay. So we identified many things, but the 10 that we were able to sort of focus on, we'll go through, and then how we were able to change those. So a big thing, they were like, you're in the room, you're in the room, you're in the room, you're in the room, you're in blue, you're in green, I have no idea who's who. So identifying who your caretaker was. So who is my nurse? So we developed whiteboards, and I know they talk about whiteboards, whose whiteboards are actually white because nobody writes on them. We had the same issue with the pens. I'd love to write on my whiteboard, but I don't have a pen. Now we have pens that actually clip onto they attach to your name badge. So we have dry erase pens, and then we try to keep the dry erase pens stocked in the rooms, but that's always a pretty good answer. It's like, I don't have a pen. So you might be the nurse from 3 days ago on your board. So we have a new initiative now to make sure that that's right. So we do have these whiteboards, and they're on every patient care area. The one issue we have in the ED is we have a lot of patients in the hallways. I don't know if any of you work in busy EDs where, you know, you might end up with 20, 25 patients on gurneys stuck anywhere that you can find any kind of real estate. They don't have whiteboards. So we're looking into figuring out what we can do about that. You know, we've got a whole committee about who can put stuff on the walls, so that's always a tough one to get through. So what we like to do is put the nurse's name, telephone number, because we all carry those little VoIP phones, phone number, care partner, and if we know anything about the plan, and hopefully you do at this point, you know, your plan is CT at 10 o'clock or CT next, you know, pending lab results, and then how to get a hold of the nurse.
So this one was a big one for us. This was the one that I spoke on. We would go in, and we would see a resident, and then we would see maybe the renal fellow, because renal's our primary, and then I'd see an attending, and then after the orders were done, I'd see a nurse, because they're like a trauma center, we don't see them. And then after you'd see the nurse, you wouldn't see her again, and then you're sitting there like, I don't know who's taking care of me, I don't know what's going on. So you pop your head out, and that's when everybody's really busy all at one time. So we really needed to figure out somebody who was taking care of us, and our thing was that we just really need a name and a number. Like, that's it, and it'll make us feel so much better. I mean, we're in there at minimum 6 hours, so to have this, it kind of changes the whole visit for us because we feel we're accounted for. So,
and I'll never forget one of our coworkers had suggested, she goes, I want to know your name, and I want to be able to see it, because I remember when I see something visually. She goes, I want you to come up to me and say, my name is Carrie, and I am your nurse. And ever since then, I have done that. Just to hear somebody say, that's important to me. I had no idea that was important to anybody.
And it really is.
So, very valuable things we learned from this. Quality improvement. That was the binder that's being passed around. That was one of the initiatives. What happens when you get admitted? If this is your first time admission to a big facility, like Alice was saying, you have no idea, an attending, a resident, an intern, then you've got your nurse, you've got your care partners, who is who? Fortunately, our uniforms are all different, so once you figure out the colors of the uniforms, you can probably figure it out. But if you don't know the whole hierarchy of a teaching facility, it can be super overwhelming. So there's a lot of things in the binder, and that is just one of them. And I'll show you later on that we've been able to almost build it into an app. It's soon to come. We actually have a demo for it. Unit practice councils, those nurses in the group probably know what those are. Most departments have a unit practice council where it's a group of sort of your more engaged nurses that get together monthly. We are allotted 4 hours a month for our meetings, and we basically take issues that we're having in the department and try to improve them based on evidence-based practice. The Parent Advisor Council said, we need somebody really to get on some of this pediatric stuff. So through this council, I chair the PEDS group, the PEDS subcommittee. We're now working on an ouchless ED. So we've got new initiatives for augmenting painful procedures. So we're using different things, topical anesthetics we're using for the nurses in the JTIP, which is a intradermal lidocaine injector for IV starts. We're starting intranasal medications, so more painless routes of administering medications. And through this subcommittee, we've been able to push a lot of these things through a lot more quickly than if it had just been me working on it. So now I've got a little committee that works on these. So that's been a really fun committee to work with because it's very energetic. The pediatric passport, this is a big one, and we've got copies of it.
So many copies, so please take one.
And I checked with our licensing people. It's not copyrighted, so feel free to augment it for your facility. It also is, the formatting for that is also in our download on the IPFCC website. If you want the file on it, it is on the website. So the pediatric passport, this is not a go past triage and not stop pass like in Monopoly, get out of jail free. It is sort of a trigger for the triage nurse to know. I've had sepsis. I get sick very quickly. We started this as a project many years ago for PEDS genetics, because I don't know if anybody has worked a lot with PEDS genetics kids, but a lot of them can get sick really fast. They come in running around, ripping around the waiting room, and 20 minutes later, their ammonia levels quadruple, and they're super sick. So we started actually with a PEDS genetics project, and they just had a letter. And that's all it was, a letter in an envelope, and if the mom remembered to bring it, great, and if they didn't, well, then they didn't. So this thing has evolved into the pediatric passport.
So the passport, remember we called ourselves frequent flyers. That's where we got the idea for the passport. For people like me, my son, just a little bit of history, when he was little, he couldn't do peritoneal dialysis. It's like a more gentle home dialysis. It was tried and failed 4 times. So he had to do hemodialysis essentially from birth. And so when little guys are on hemodialysis with these big, you know, they're pushing and pulling the blood, he's lost all of his central axis. He doesn't have any jugulars. He lost his left subclavian. And so now he only had one line left for his right subclavian, and he was going to lose if the line was tenuous. So instead of waiting until he was big enough to create a bladder before they transplanted, they had to transplant him right away. And that came with a lot of challenges. So they took my kidney. It was supposed to last 30 years. It lasted a year and a half. And the reason was that they had to use a tube that went through the ureter into the kidney, and he really attacked that peritoneal dialysis catheter. Well, he really attacked this one too. And so by the time they built him a bladder in October, he was transplanted in March, it was October, and they pulled the stent out, it was completely scarred. And when they realized, when they went and put a nephrostomy tube, because now they had to drain directly from the kidney, that was so scarred that both collecting systems couldn't dump, so he had 2 nephrostomy tubes. So he was getting sick all the time. He was always infected. He was completely like immune compromised because they were kind of waiting for transplant while they worked up my cousin. So it was every 3 to 6 weeks he would get an infection and he would get fully septic. One time it was rush hour. We live in LA, everything takes like 45 minutes, unfortunately. It's like a 20-minute drive, but it was rush hour. It was probably going to take about an hour and a half. So I called an ambulance, and that was not the right call. The ambulance doesn't give fluids. He went to a local hospital that couldn't handle him. He got fully septic in the ED. He ended up taking a helicopter, and he almost died that night. So this was serious for us. We would go to the ED all the time, like I said, every 3 to 6 weeks, until finally we created a plan talk about PFCC, where they wanted to take the kidney out and then just kind of wait and dialyze him, but I knew that they couldn't do dialysis because he's lost all of his lines. So we fought, and I was, at the end, infusing two different antibiotics twice a day and directly into his kidney, which they said no other parent would ever be allowed to do. It was completely sterile. I had full access to his organ. But that's how we kept him alive until we got him transplanted. Ironically, when they did do the transplant, right before the transplant, they needed a dialysis catheter in case it failed. It never worked. So because of PFCC and because of the fact that I was empowered enough to fight for him, I saved his life because he would have died. And I got in a fight with the attending in the room telling me that he was going to die if we did it the way I did it. So definitely, if you have your gut, you know, follow it. So anyway, so we go to the ED every 3 to 6 weeks. So what happened one time was we went in, and I told him he's really sick. He's got a fever. He's going to get septic. Okay, put him at the bottom of the pile. I was so scared that I ended up paging the renal fellow, and I said, you need to come down and assess him because he can decline in like an hour, you know. So she came down. She was like, he's going to be okay. We can wait. This, if I show up with this and I just put it in, right at them, they say, oh, okay, let's triage him. We need to get a set of vitals because then you can know if he's stable. But before that, I just literally sat in a packed ED, and I was scared, almost trembling because I didn't know what was going to happen to my son, if he was going to die or not, just waiting to get seen. So this passport for us was, you know, it essentially saved his life, or at least it saved some years off of mine. I mean, so it was a really beautiful thing for us.
The first iteration of this, because we sat and talked about it, do we want it like a real passport, like a little book, and then have their favorite colors in and have their favorite food and maybe some food allergies, some med allergies. And I don't know if anybody here works in the ED, but we're all kind of ADD, and we're like, I want one page, and it's got to be short, because if it's more than 10 lines, I'm not going to read it. So we were like, no, it's got to be succinct. I have minutes to triage you. I don't have hours. So it's got to be short. It's got to be sweet. Get to the point. Let me know what you need. Let me know what I can do to make your life better, to save things. And actually, Jen, one of our coworkers, was working on this when she was admitted on fifth floor with her daughter, Ella, who had been sent in for septic shock. So she called me from her room. She's up there on her laptop while they're giving Ella antibiotics. And I'm like, oh, my God, what are you doing? But she was up there for weeks, so she had some time to work on this. So first iteration, this is iteration number two, and this is actually what's built into our forms portal. So anybody, clinics, anybody who's got access to any of our health system, so the whole system has access. So Pete's clinics all have access.
I want to leave when you click it. Okay, so when we first did the passport, we said, when we go into, because I know my son's medical record number, I could tell you. I don't know anything else, but I know that. So I go in and I say, why can't I just give him my medical record number and it just flash on the screen? And they're like, well, we can't do that. We don't have the technology. So we held this piece of paper that had all these creases. It was barely holding together. Well, 2016, now I can give him my medical record number and it flashes up on the screen. So that's, you know, keep pushing your goals, people.
Yeah, so now, I don't know if anybody's on Epic. This is an Epic screenshot. So in March of this year, we finally got it built in. We've been trying for 4 years. So those of you who know Epic know that Epic is slow. but if things can be done, even though they tell you you can't, if you keep pushing, they can be done. So we did finally have it built into our EMR. There's two different views, the nurse view, the doc view. Those of you familiar with Epic know that everybody's got a different view. We also have something called the patient story. The ER doesn't see that, so we needed something that would pop up for us. Much like the paper passport, who, if you go to the floor, they don't really care if you have a passport because you've already gone through all that stuff. But this pops up for us, so it makes it very easy to see. This is the app I was telling you about. So they got this really cute little panda bear app. So that's for the iPhone. This is the icon that will show up on your screen once it's live, and that's what it's going to look like on your iPad. The binder that's going around is also in this. So there's quite a few different things in this. It's not live yet. It's still in demo version, but it should be live very shortly. So my child's care, the passport's in there, and lots of different resources in there. So I think that with everybody with smartphones these days, it'll be a huge thing, especially those with kids with chronic complex situations. So we're really excited about this app.
Yeah, and that app includes something. They did like a care journal. I don't write anything down. I kind of go off this beautiful thing, but people like to write. I'm not that cocky. people like to write all this stuff, and so that app includes that as well, so you can kind of journal out what you have to do. Or if you need to hand over to your husband or wife that doesn't know as much as you, you can have that, and then they can see what happened that day.
That's great. We're also trying to develop, for those of you in the adult world, we're also trying to develop, we're actually in process of developing a generalized app that could be used for adults and kids and anybody in any setting anywhere that we hope to be able to share with the healthcare community.
Which is great for us because my son keeps asking to go to Hawaii. So I don't like to go anywhere where I don't feel comfortable with the children's hospital, so I guess I would research that first, and then I bring the app. So if anything happens to him, I can just show them they have all the access to his doctor's info.
This is our coworker, Jen Fine. She was actually unfortunately passed away last year from a complicated illness. And this is her daughter, Ella, and this was her sort of inspiration she was our big, big champion, our big leader for the Parent Advisory Council. And this is her daughter, Ella, who had the hepatoblastoma and unfortunately had intraventricular hemorrhages post-op, two liver transplants, very complicated history. Ella is doing well. Anyway, they were quoted in the Wall Street Journal after we presented up in Canada 2 or 3 years ago. Actually, 2015. So we had done a presentation up in Canada, and then Jen got quoted in the Wall Street Journal, which was really very cool to see. Let's see. We go on to child life coverage. So we got some spotty coverage in the ED initially. We'd have, you know, child life specialists a little here, a little there, and then all of a sudden we got somebody that was 4 days a week, 10 hours, and we kind of mapped out where our peak peds admissions were to the ED. And then the parents were like, no, that's not enough. We need more. Yeah. You know, I came in at, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday. Why is nobody there at
right.
4 o'clock in the afternoon
on
Thursday?
Or
midnight. So unfortunately, we don't have midnight coverage now, but they did double our coverage in 2015. And I think this was really a big push.
It was.
Because we had, you know, big leadership present at that meeting.
It was. So we were able to get staff, you know, we got a staff member, which is really hard for child life. And this woman, the one main one that we got, she has held Evan's hand while he went into an ultrasound.
Right here.
Ultrasound's not scary. Ultrasound's really scary for a guy with PTSD. So she held his hand and let him play on a tablet. I mean, it's changed the way that we have to be in there. He doesn't have to be panicked and shaking. We have this girl in purple that comes and saves the day for us. So.
And they all wear purple, so they're easy to identify.
Yeah.
And the kids know who the child life specialists are.
They know the purple.
We had a kid come in the other day, ended up in our trauma bay because we had no other rooms. He was a code sepsis. And the child life specialist walked in and completely changed the dynamic of the room. Big smiles. They all know each other. It's really pretty cool. Another huge thing, and we never thought this would happen, but we now have pediatric hospitalists covering for 24/7. And that started actually in 2013, very shortly after that first meeting. About a year after the first meeting, we really, really pushed for pediatric hospitalists.
This one was huge because I said we would sit there and we didn't know, like they would come in and they'd say, we're going to do this, and then we wouldn't see them again, and no one would come in. We weren't sure if they were coming in for vitals or what. And then once, we didn't know this, but once you're deemed a boarder, like, you're kind of, like, hands-off. They don't need to take care of you anymore. You're like, not that they don't need to, but you're transitioned into the floor. So it's the floor's responsibility, but you're not on the floor. You're all the way down the first floor. So you're kind of stuck in limbo. And when we got the hospitalist, it was twofold. Because, one, we got the hospitalist, but teams like renal didn't want to hand over the reins. I mean, that was crazy. And then we have, you know, like, Evan, he's got urology, GI, infectious disease. And so all those guys want to work, but they don't want the hospitalist to kind of man that. So we had to, like, grassroots go to our people. It was nephrology and it was liver GI, and tell them we need you to buy in on this because this is really important. So they did. And so now when we go in, there's this one person, and this person says, I'm in charge of you. I'm going to be in this time. I'm going to call the floor. We're going to see why you don't have a bed. If you're not getting up there in a couple hours, I'm going to come back. They're in there all the time. I can't tell you what that has done for us, because to sit there for, you know, 6, 8, 12 hours and not have anybody come in and not know what's going on except for maybe somebody taking vitals, that's awful. But to have someone in all the time, they're part of your care, they're making it happen, like, that's tremendous. And then to have that person, because like I said, we come in at, he's not going to get sick at 2, he's going to get sick at 1 in the morning, and so that we have them there too. And they take care of everything. That's been, like, the best change for us. Well, I guess the passport's pretty beautiful too, but the hospitalist has been
a big, big
huge
change in
for everyone.
Big change in coordination and care. Improved communication for admissions. The ED has been empowered to call PEDS. And sometimes if we call them directly and skip our patient placement folks, then they can prompt patient placement, you know, because they know if their beds are empty. So that's been a big help. They did identify some areas Anita, I'm going to start off with a short video.
This is kind of our way of presenting stories. We feel like you can get the message when you see what we're talking about. So this was us. This is what we did to them when we asked for line care.
Story our son's central line to us and to him, actually, represents life. It is what has kept him alive since the day that he was born until now at 14 years old.
The best thing about having a line, and for Zach, it's a port, is that he does not have to be poked, and he is able to get the life-saving medications that he needs.
Casey's central line has given him a quality of life that he wouldn't have if he didn't have it. It's his lifeline. That's what it is.
My child's immune compromised, so an infection could end his life. And having that risk is what makes me the most fearful of him having a central line, is his central line being infected.
It's a line directly to his heart, and any mistake whatsoever can lead to an infection, which could lead to loss of line or loss of life, and that's terrifying.
You bring her in for care, and it's treated so flippantly and hooked up and caught and yanked on and just accessed without the same care and protocols that I did at home.
We get scared. It's terrifying. I know what to do, and I access this line every day. But when someone comes and maybe who doesn't access his line or who doesn't do it the same way we do it at home, Casey gets very nervous. He gets scared. He cries, he cowers, he holds on to that feeling for a long time afterwards, even to the next hospital stay. So it's important for him to know that things are going to be done the way he wants them done.
Recently, I was trying to describe to somebody the fear that we have in regards to people accessing his central line. And the best way I could describe it was if you were camping and a bear came into your campsite and was next to your tent, the kind of fear that you feel of the danger that you're in with that bear being beside your tent, that bear has the potential to kill you. Will it? Maybe not. But it could, and that's how we feel each time somebody goes to access our son's central line. It's direct access to his heart, to his bloodstream, and one wrong move, one swipe of the finger, one turn of the head, and it literally could mean that our son could die from it.
That is the only line we have, and I think that it's important that even if I don't tell them that, that they treat it like that. But if I could have the opportunity to tell them, not to make them sweat or anything, but I would like to let them know that that is all we have left, and they have to treat it with the utmost respect.
Casey came into the ER. He had a line infection. We knew. We do the same thing every time. One of the antibiotics that he's on requires a pre-med with Benadryl. And the nurse that came in pushed the Benadryl into his central line, and Casey felt like he was going to die. He got a sense of impending doom. He started coughing and choking, and he felt like he was going to die. We had no idea this was going to happen. We did not know that this was going to be the reaction that he was going to get. He had had Benadryl in his central line 100 times, just it wasn't pushed. It was put in a Buretrol and slowly administered. So we promised him it would never happen again. We swore up and down, Casey, that's never going to happen again. And sure enough, probably 6 months later, it happened again. So now, when someone walks in the room with Benadryl, Casey shakes, he cries, he cowers in his bed, he screams, he's locked himself in the bathroom, he is 11 years old, and he can't get over that feeling that even though he says don't do that, someone is still going to come in and do that to him.
All these children are different. A lot of them have had this line for a long time. They've lived with it for a while now, and they know what makes them comfortable and what they need to have happen.
Think of how you would be in the OR with a heart that was open and treat the central line like that same kind of access to the heart.
When anyone touches that line, I want time to stand still. There's nothing else that is more important in that very moment than doing it right, than being calm, than treating that line like it is a lifeline, and to understand the importance of what they're doing in that moment.
Having the flexibility to understand that what works for one child might not be the best thing for another child.
Just ask. Be transparent. We're all human. Not everyone needs to know every answer. So if you don't know, or if you see a child who's visibly scared, or even one who's not, just ask. Is there a way you do this at home, or is there a way that I can make you comfortable while I'm accessing your line?
Remember, this 4 years ago, they didn't know patient-family-centered care, and now it's saying it begins with you. So think about the kind of change happens with PFCC.
So after the ED PFCC meeting with the PAC group, we requested a video, not knowing they were going to go like get this professionally done.
It is Los Angeles.
I should have known we're in Hollywood, right? So we were like, when they came out with the video, we're like, oh. Wow, we were going to think, like, I did it on my iPhone and snipped it together. So very impressed by the video. We use it in training now. I've used it in many different conferences. I speak a lot on pediatric sepsis, and I use that in every class I give, and people are like, wow. I mean, it's as I'm sure you feel, it's a pretty impactful video. So out of their request for this central line issue, we've done enhanced training now in the ED. It's now an annual competency for central line training. We bought this dummy, which is called Chester Chest, and he's got all sorts of different central lines. He's got a port. He's got double lumen, so different access, and we use that for training purposes. So that was a very big initiative that made a huge change in procedure for us. And the video, like I said, we used in training, and I think it's a new grad training as well.
That wasn't helpful. Where's the...
There we go. Okay, so another issue that was identified during that meeting was pediatric sepsis.
That was mine.
And this is Allison's. So this one, oops, is starring Allison. There we go.
Can't see it, though.
My name's Allison. My son's name's Evan. He's 3 and a half. He was born with a
We brought Evan, so that's who's all loud. We wanted to meet him at the end. And Tegan.
My name's Allison. My son's name's Evan. He's 3 and a half. He was born with a malformed urinary tract, which includes a non-functioning bladder and kidney failure. So he, amongst other things worth noting, but he was from birth on hemodialysis because PD didn't work for him. And on hemodialysis, you have no immune system, basically. And so he was in the hospital often. He's actually spent more than half of his life in the hospital. March of 2012, he got a kidney transplant. Again, you're immunocompromised being a transplant. And that's when we came into the idea of sepsis. And about a month, month and a half later, we came in. He was kind of borderline septic, but looked okay. We were moved to a room. We were there for like hours. So I went and slept in the car because my boyfriend and Evan were sleeping in a bed. And I came back, and in a matter of like 3 hours, he was like fully septic. Meanwhile, he had a pulse ox on his toe. So someone was watching him, and as soon as I walked in, I looked at the monitor, and you could tell that his heart rate was really elevated. So I know he was febrile. And I asked them to get his blood pressure, and his blood, he had dropped. He was like 50s over 30s. He was very, very sick. And so in the course of me taking a three-hour nap, he decreased dramatically, and there was not a person that noticed, even though apparently if you have a pulse ox, you're on the monitor, so someone should have noticed that at least he was febrile and came in and took vitals. So I talked to the pediatric team later about that incident. He kind of came up like even like 2 months later, and they were talking about how they could have totally prevented it had they give him any kind of like fluid bolus to keep his fluid levels up.
Okay, so this started our pediatric sepsis initiative. I had started an initiative the year before, but this sort of upped the ante to do something about it. So we started a pediatric order set and screening tool in the ED, and that was integrated into our new EMR starting in 2013. And then in 2014, when we realized our numbers were improving, but not as improving as quickly as we wanted, I did some research on what can we do to improve this. One of them was a screening tool. We already had that. The other was a sepsis order set. We already had that. What else can I do? And one is a rapid response team. So we now have an overhead page which pulls an ED crew and it's internal. ED crew in to respond to code sepsis. I initially requested it from my supervisor that we do it for pediatrics. She goes, what about the adults? I'm like, oh, okay. So we do peds and adults. I was like, oh, she's got a good point.
The really great thing about this is, you know, we've talked about this. We present it. And that local hospital that I had brought Evan to in the ambulance and he got septic, we were there recently and they announced the code sepsis. So that wouldn't have happened again today because of our code sepsis. I don't know what you did to get it to work last time.
I don't either. It doesn't like to advance it after the slides. After the movie.
I hit enter and brought it up, and then we X'd it. Maybe that'll help.
Let's try that. Sorry, guys.
Sorry for the...
This is a... I had the IT in...
We're not technically savvy.
There we go. Okay, line care script badges. This is the last of our current initiatives. This is still in process. And this was at the request of the whole sepsis group, is that we have sort of a script, and it fits on your ID badge. It's a little badge buddy. And it's sort of the last lady that spoke in the video, is there a home protocol that you use? Obviously, we have to stick within our policy, but is there a home protocol that makes your child more comfortable? Is there something we can do? Does he need his teddy bear? Does he need his mom to be holding him a certain way? Certain things that can help their comfort level. What routine do you use? And then if there's any demonstrations that the parent wants to give. Lessons learned, just really the importance of a strong collaboration, really good communication. And, you know, yesterday in the opening keynote, they were talking about sort of the pillars, the core concepts of PSCC. So dignity and respect, information sharing, so transparency, participation and collaboration. And I think that... without using those words, that's really what this slide says. Lessons learned is really a good team collaboration, and really senior leadership buy-in was super huge for us. What can you do to apply to your facilities? I think all of us wouldn't be here if we didn't already have PFCCs, so we're rather lucky, but we started off ahead of the game, which we were lucky at. But the ED can be included. I don't see a whole lot of groups working with emergency departments, so you can use, you can include... your emergency departments. You can include your clinics.
I'm just going to get the kids. Since my uneventful one is screaming in the hallway.
And then, like I said, the passport is adaptable.
Where's Tegan?
And we have two special...
We're going to bring them in. Hi, Liz.
We have a couple special guests.
Why don't you go up front here? Come on in. Come with Carrie Gold's there. She wants to say hi to you. It's real important. Come say hi to Carrie. Don't be scared. It's okay. Hey, it's okay. Here, let me hold you. Baby, please. You're the reason why this is going to be successful, okay?
Hi.
Did he? He's a little scared.
Here, come here. Hi, Tegan. Here, I'll
take Tegan. Hey, I wanted them to see how well you're doing. But you're showing them that you're really scared. Where's Perry? He gets a little scared when he first sees everyone. All of Me Loves All of You by John Legend. He's a love ballad guy, so he likes that. What's the other one that you like? Ed Sheeran song. But the slow one, the love ballad. He likes boots because they make noise when he walks. He doesn't have his boots on today. Yeah, I don't know why he doesn't have them. He's really good with a crowd, but the whole PTSD, it takes him a little bit to warm up. But yeah, this is Evan. He's doing really well. He wasn't allowed to be around kids for a very long time because he was immune compromised, so he's a little institutionalized. We went to a medically fragile kindergarten 2 years ago. He got to go to his local kindergarten last year, and now he's going to first grade. He also really likes, he knows all the states in alphabetical order. You can give him a blank map of the United States. He can fill in all the states and the capitals, and he's currently, yeah, what's the capital of New York? Do you remember?
Albany.
Albany, that's right. And we're going to go try to see Barack Obama because he likes presidents, and we're going to D.C. later. But he's memorizing them all in order, even though his favorite presidents are Ronald Reagan, UCLA, that's what he wanted to name the baby, and Abraham Lincoln, they're both Republicans, but he wants to meet Barack too, so... So that's him. So he's doing well, so no need to be, you know, to fear for him. He's great. So does anybody have any questions?
What's the capital of Pennsylvania?
Harrisburg.
Good job, Ev.
And don't, we have two questions, so I have the mic.
Just a real quick question about your welcome packets that you give. They're permanent in the rooms?
They aren't. So they're very expensive to make. So they've identified the people that are going to be there long term, and they're given to those people. It can be through the ED. It can be social work. It can be from anyone, from the nurses. They just identify the people that are going to be there for a while.
Oh, so they actually get to keep them up. Because we have something similar, and I liked in the back that you have the care pages, and
right.
I was just, but it's that looks like you refer people to download them and et cetera. So it's really
that's nicely done.
Yeah,
they get
great.
To keep them, and they also are doing those care journals for the people that want to write. So,
sorry.
Hi there. I'm gonna, would you mind holding a notebook? My questions are written down here. So with regard to the notebook, I guess actually my question was, how do you keep the information current? Do you have like a follow-up protocol that you review information every year or every 6 months?
With the binder?
Yeah.
We haven't. We've just kind of put a bunch of stuff that it's still relevant, so
right.
We're okay. And I think it's going to get phased out because it's going to be the app now.
Okay.
So that's how we would keep things current is through the app.
Okay, great. And my other, you know what? That was all my questions. She asked the other one, so
all right.
Thank you.
Sure thing. Anybody else? You could always come and talk to us after, too. Anybody got a state capital? Or? What's New Jersey?
Fletcher.
Yeah. Dude, you're
on fire. Yeah, he's really good. I advise you don't print a blank state map and do it with a child because it's really embarrassing when you mix them up. I got, like, Connecticut mixed up with one, and he's like, mom. So, because you will not remember all the states, and I feel really bad for Idaho, but it just didn't happen.
Wyoming.
I did. I thought Colorado was cold. It would be higher. Yeah, I mixed them up. I did. So, you got anything else? Do you have anything to add?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.